I know what I'm doing when I'm up here to do worship, but I don't do this as often. So, like, which microphone? Hello, lovely to see you. I feel kind of far away. I'm a school teacher, and it's a bit like my classes where I have to encourage people to sit at the front, but that's okay. Thank you, Gavin. Hello, I'm Catherine. Nice to have you here tonight. Nice to meet you if I haven't met you before. And tonight I'm going to be speaking on one of the Psalms that we come across in the Bible. But I thought it would be helpful just to have a look back at some of the explanation and introduction that we've been considering about what the Psalms are, just to give a bit of context, particularly if they're maybe not very familiar for you. So Psalms fit into a category in the Bible called wisdom literature. This is also what the story of Job fits into, and if you're familiar with the book of Proverbs, that falls within there as well. And just like these other books that are wisdom literature, the idea is that they are tools for the journey. So they help us to make it through difficult times, just as they did for Israel, particularly when they were in exile. These tools help us to walk the path of following Jesus, offering words when our words fail, and taking us on a journey. From the Psalms that we've looked at church, and if it's a book that you've spent time in, you would know that there are Psalms that fit every emotion. They're very, very good at expressing experiences and thoughts and ideas and hopes and fears and all these different things that we go through as humans. Psalms offer words when we have none. It's also really important for us to remember, and if you come to this church regularly, you've probably heard this, that Psalms may reveal what is true about God, but they always reveal what is true about the human condition. So they're not primarily aiming to be a theological statement, a statement of truth about what God is like or who he is. That's not their aim. But rather they are interested in exploring this thing we call the human condition, what's real about us. That doesn't mean that there is not truth there, but just recognizing that it's different to some other parts of the Bible, which clearly tell us, you know, this is what God is like and this is who God is. The Psalms are a little bit different. So with that in mind, we're going to launch into Psalm 20. This is a psalm of David for the director of music. May the Lord answer you when you are in distress. May the name of the God of Jacob protect you. May he send you help from the sanctuary and grant you support from Zion. May he remember all your sacrifices and accept your burnt offerings. May he give you the desire of your heart and make all your plans succeed. May we shout for joy over your victory and lift up our banners in the name of our God. May the Lord grant all your requests. Now this I know, the Lord gives victory to his anointed. He answers from his heavenly sanctuary with the victorious power of his right hand. Some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God. They are brought to their knees and fall, but we rise and stand firm. Lord, give victory to the King. Answer us when we call. I wonder if you have ever said something that you wish you could take back. Maybe there's a situation you can think of that you wish you had said something, but you stayed quiet. I remember very clearly a situation probably 15 years ago. I was at a friend's birthday party, and I knew a lot of people there, and I spent a lot of the evening catching up with an old friend that I hadn't seen for a while. We'd been friends since high school. We knew each other very well, a lot of banter, all those sorts of things. And at one point in the night, I made a comment, which I intended to be a joke. But really sadly, it cut to the bone and it actually did a lot of harm to my friend. 15 years later, I still really regret those careless words. They were unkind. They were totally unnecessary and they did a lot of damage. They actually really changed and shaped the way this friend viewed themselves in a particular situation. And I really, really wish that I could take those words back. The reality is I can't. I can also think of many conversations that I've been part of or witnessed as a teacher. And I remember one time at a school I was teaching at where I asked a student if they were interested in pursuing science. I'm a science teacher, and I asked them if they were interested in pursuing science when they got up into their senior years. And they turned to me and they said, "Oh, miss, I'm not smart enough to do science." And this was at the time, one of the best students in my class. They were doing perfectly well in science. They were getting good grades. They were understanding the material. They could tell me what they knew, and they were in the middle of an experiment that they were doing accurately, and yet their belief about themselves that had come from somewhere was, "Oh, I'm not smart enough. I'm not smart enough to do science." Words have power. And the Bible tells us a lot about this. It tells us a lot about words. In Proverbs 18, it says, "Wise words satisfy like a good meal. The right words bring satisfaction. The tongue can bring death or life. Those who love to talk will reap the consequences." Words have power, and the Bible tells us a lot about this, but far too often I have used words forgetting their power. Maybe you have too. I was given a choice tonight about what psalm I would speak on, and it took me quite a long time to decide on one. I, you know, threw around a few different ideas. There were three or four others, all of which I felt like I had the ability to talk on and share some sort of interesting thoughts or ideas. But this one, Psalm 20, really struck me as I read it. There are a few reasons for that. Firstly, it read very differently to other psalms and wasn't particularly familiar to me. It has all these "may you" statements in the first number of verses, and it's calling down blessing on someone. Secondly, as I read it, it became very clear to me that it was a blessing I wanted. I wanted to receive this blessing, and it was also a blessing I felt very strongly I wanted to proclaim over others. This psalm has been a reminder to me of the power and weight that our words hold, and it's important for us to reflect on them, because with great power comes great responsibility. I got given this book, The Grace Outpouring. I don't know if you can see it. And I've been reading through it, and I've been finding it both challenging and a little bit uncomfortable at times. One of the major themes in it is about blessing people. The authors identify blessing as being a bit different to prayer, but complementary to prayer. So I thought what I'd do is I'd read a little bit of it to you to help explain some of what they had to say. "When the practice of priesthood was originally about to commence, God instructed Moses to explain to Aaron how he and the priests were to act. Not only were they to intercede, pray, for the people, but they were to pronounce blessings over them as well." And this is from Numbers. "The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Speak to Aaron and his sons, saying, Thus you shall bless the people of Israel. You shall say to them, The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace.'" Numbers 6, 22 to 26. Then came a remarkable explanation and insight. Verse 27. So shall they put my name upon the people of Israel, and I will bless them. God placed into the mouths of the priests the power to speak words that caused God to unleash transformational, life-changing blessings upon the people. This is in line with our understanding that when people on earth are in agreement with the word from heaven, the power of God's kingdom comes and is released in the here and now on earth. This is where I get a bit uncomfortable. We make a great mistake if we believe that it is simply wordy theology. It then refers to Leviticus 9. Then Aaron lifted up his hands towards the people and blessed them, and he came down from offering the sin offering and the burnt offering and the peace offerings. So notice what happens in verses 23 to 24. And Moses and Aaron went into the tent of meeting, and when they came out, they blessed the people, and the glory of the Lord appeared to all the people. And fire came out from before the Lord and consumed the burnt offering and the pieces of fat on the altar, and when all the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces. What a difference is made to the priesthood when blessing comes from an encounter, a meeting with God. The supernatural is released, the glory of God is seen, and he receives praise. They then go on to talk a little bit about what does it actually look like to bless someone, and how is it different to praying for someone? And one of the things they talk about is saying, I bless you. And he says, notice the personal pronoun, I. It is I who is pronouncing blessing in the name of Jesus over the person. I have not prayed to God for a blessing, but have spoken a blessing using the authority Jesus gives us to pronounce blessing on the people, so that he may come and bless them. This is what Jesus commissioned us to do when he drew us into the kingdom of priests. So, in the context of our psalm tonight, it got me thinking about if this is true, if these sort of ideas presented in this book are correct, then what would it look like to declare this blessing, this psalm, over people? May the Lord answer you when you are in distress. May the name of God, of the God of Jacob, protect you. What if I declared this over my students? May he send you help from the sanctuary and grant you support from Zion. What if we declared this over Alice Springs? Over our streets, our homes, the places we work. May he give you the desire of your heart and make all your plans succeed. May we shout for joy over your victory and lift up our banners in the name of our God. May the Lord grant all your requests. At this point, you might be thinking similarly to what I've been wrestling with. Well, how is that any different to what I've been praying? Well, the answer is, I'm still working through that. I don't think that it's more effective to bless someone than to pray for them, but it does seem to be slightly different. As Gavin and I were chatting about this psalm, he told me something that he's been saying recently, and he said it earlier in the service. We each have our say-so. It's a bit of an odd phrase, but it's trying to recognize that we have been given authority by God and through Jesus, which is emphasized in places such as the Great Commission, to have authority and power when we speak. So, declaring or calling down blessing on someone is having say-so. If our words have power to bless, though, the Bible also is very clear that our words have power to tear down, damage, and even curse. We are told that we will be held to account for careless words. The tongue can bring death or life. As God's people, we are called to bring life. So We need to watch how we use our tongues. Another example of words having power that struck me this week is a friend who has been delighting in reading The Lord of the Rings for the first time. This story shows us the power of words to create an entire world and bring characters to life with language and history and names and families. Other ways we can see how words have power is in cultures where names have power. If you think about Hebrew culture or even Australian Indigenous cultures. In the Old Testament, we often come across names that are full of meaning and purpose. My Bible study is currently reading through Hosea, and it's been quite confronting to see some of the names that God tells Hosea to name his children to illustrate a point. And the Lord said to Hosea, "Name your daughter Lo-Ruhamah, not loved, for I will no longer show love to the people of Israel or forgive them." And the Lord said, "Name your son Lo-Ami, not my people, for Israel is not my people and I am not their God." These names in the particular period of history and context and the people that they're delivered to have power and weight. In Genesis, at the beginning of the Bible, we see Abraham and Sarah's son given a name full of meaning. And the angel said, "You are now pregnant and will give birth to a son. You are to name him Ishmael, which means God hears, for the Lord has heard your cry of distress." If you're familiar with parts of the Old Testament and some of the stories there, you might be aware that God has a bit of a habit of changing people's names. It's something he does quite often, and then Jesus carries this tradition on in some instances in the New Testament as well. In Genesis 17, verse 5, it says this, "What's more, I am changing your name. It will no longer be Abram. Instead, you will be called Abraham, for you will be the father of many nations." Similarly, in many Australian Indigenous cultures, we see that words and names hold weight and power. An example of this that you might be familiar with is that often you don't use the name of someone who's deceased until the family or the community gives permission for that name to be used again. Now, I know that there are certain beliefs, spiritual beliefs and practices around that, but the point I'm making is just that there is a recognition that a name is not meaningless and words are not meaningless. Spoken word is not meaningless. As we come to a close in these reflections on this psalm, it's important to look at what I would sort of call the second half, where it seems to shift a bit from these "may you" statements and "may the Lord" statements. "Now this I know, the Lord gives victory to his anointed. He answers him from his heavenly sanctuary with the victorious power of his right hand. Some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God. They are brought to their knees and fall, but we rise up and stand firm. Lord, give victory to the king. Answer us when we call." I think it's also worth noting that there are some exclamation marks used in this. When or why did David write this psalm? Well, obviously, it is revealing something about his human condition, an experience that he is in, and something that he's crying out for. But there were some key things that stood out to me in this. There is confidence in his declaration. It is not even a request that God would answer, but a declaration that God does. It shows confidence in who God is, that he will use the victorious power of his right hand. And it also highlights the belief and the trust in the consistency of God's character, his actions, his response. David is sure and confident of what he will receive from God. As we come to a close, what I would like to do, what I think is fitting, is to actually declare this psalm as a blessing over you, over our church, and over our community. And I checked that I'm allowed to do that. I will change one word in it. You might have noticed it says in the second last verse, Lord, give victory to the king. I'm going to ask for victory for us. May the Lord answer you when you are in distress. May the name of God of Jacob protect you. May he send you help from the sanctuary and grant you support from Zion. May he remember all your sacrifices and accept your burnt offerings. May he give you the desire of your heart and make all your plans succeed. May we shout for joy over your victory and lift up our banners in the name of our God. May the Lord grant all your requests. Now this I know, the Lord gives victory to his anointed. He answers him from his heavenly sanctuary with the victorious power of his right hand. Some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God. They are brought to their knees and fall, but we rise and stand firm. Lord, give victory to your people. Answer us when we call.